Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Davis
and Benjamin Holden. So today we've got a very special guest on, all the way from the other side of the world. He is a YouTube sensation, I'll do so myself. He has got, he's an absolute heartbreaker. He's got the voice of an angel. And he's also a business owner that runs his own coaching platform that helps thousands of others. So I suppose you could say, he sounds a little bit like me, just about the heartbreaker bit and the voice of an angel. But thanks for coming on anyway, Zach. We'll dive straight into it. Today's topic is going to basically be looking at, I don't know what I'm going to call the podcast yet. I might call it the dangers of dieting, but I guess we'll kind of wrap it up.
Dangers of dieting. It sounds like some sort of tragedy.
But before we dive into the juicy bit, I think we all met. It was probably at the first, your guys' first Gymshark event, wasn't it, in Manchester?
Last July? I lose track of time. I don't even know. It was last July, wasn't it?
It's pretty much a year ago.
Yeah.
A bit over.
This year's just flown by the way, COVID, hasn't it?
I feel like this year hasn't even been a year. It's just been, like, it's August. I have to, like, check my watch every day. I'm like, is it actually August?
I know. We were going to come to Oz in January again next year, but I think from what I've heard from other people, I don't think, like, Oz are going to be opening the borders, like, sometime, are they?
Yeah, we're cooked. Down here, there's nothing going on. Like, I don't think they have any plans to even open that stuff up. So I've just ruled out travel for a while now. Just come to terms with it.
Yeah, it's a sad
thing. Is what it is.
I know, a bit shitter for a little bit, but we're not too bad at traveling, are we? We've been to like Barcelona, we've been to a couple of different places.
That's so good. Yeah, so Elliot went to Greece like the other day. I can't even leave the house. Like, I got an hour to go outside. I'm like, I guess it is.
Yeah, he the other day, he messaged me saying, just fly out. I was like, mate, I'm fucking driving down the M50 back to Liverpool. He's actually the fly out to Greece. But yeah, I mean, we're lucky that we can still get on about a little bit. But
you just do what you can, though. Like, I've just been doing more work, basically, at home, just getting stuck into more different projects and just getting other stuff done. So it hasn't been too bad. Like, take what you can get.
Yeah, I suppose for you, it's coming up to your summer as well, isn't it?
Yeah, just the first day of spring, like yesterday.
Yeah.
So happy days.
we're just coming to the shit store now, aren't we?
Yeah, the weather here is absolutely terrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean it's not even just that it's cold, it rains every single day. So yeah, you can't get your steps in, you can't go for your walk.
Yeah, that's the bad thing. What do you do in winter when you're trying to get like your steps up? You're just walking around doing laps around the house.
Mate, it's pretty much pointless being shredded this time of year because no one apart from your next door neighbour sees you.
Nobody will see you.
Yeah. No one sees you.
Yeah, literally.
No one sees you in your bowlies apart from the next door neighbour and taking the washing out, that's about it. But talking of being shredded, I think we'll dive into the juicy part of the podcast now. I wanted to kick off with a couple of quick stats anyway. One that I was quite surprised about when I was looking at some of the Aussie stats, actually, because over in the UK, we just released a scheme recently to tackle type 2 diabetes, which is obviously a usually direct effect of like lifestyle choice and is directly correlated to obesity. And I think I had a stat pulled up there that in the UK, that the majority of adults who are overweight and obese, it comes to like about 67% of the adult population. Well, those being men anyway, and then 60% being women. And then I was looking at the Aussie stats, and it was, I think it was published by government guidelines as well, in one of the national surveys that was done, that two-thirds, and again, 67% of Aussies, adults, were overweight or obese, which is 12.5 million. But I think that, for me, that was quite surprising, because when I went to like Bondi, I suppose every place is different. When I went to Bondi last year, the majority of people that you've seen like walking around with, like, not everyone's in mega good shape, but you don't see as many, I suppose, fatties as you do.
That's Bondi though. That's because that's the place where all the better people just like congregate. Down there. it's like just a festival flat out. But like I would say, just regular streets, it's the same like here as it is in America by the looks of it. Like it's, and the UK, it's all the same. I feel.
Yeah. Well, I think the big thing for us now, because I spoke about it briefly yesterday. They pushed out this in the UK, this soup and shake scheme, which.
Yeah, what's the go with that? Just a quick like pitch of it, what is it?
So it's basically because type 2 diabetes over here, they reckon eventually it's going to crush the NHS. And because it's costing like 10 billion per year, I think, in like admissions and like one in every 20 prescriptions are due to type 2 diabetes. They're pushing out this scheme, which is like a really aggressive low calorie diet to, because that's the way that you reverse type 2 diabetes via lifestyle choice. But I think the only thing for us was, and the thing that we were looking at, is like the longevity of it.
100%.
Do you reckon that is? And the longevity of it, basically. Because what I think it was 800 calories that the person's on, and it's got to be done for 3 months to help reverse it. I think my biggest concern was like, what are people going to do afterwards? Like
800 a day, that's it.
Yeah,
800 a day.
It's obviously crazy. it's all liquids because it's
super shakes.
Crazy. Okay.
So if you look at any
frustration with it.
Yeah, so if you look at it from a perspective of like, well, the way that we'd look at it with clients, is that you probably tell people don't get your calories from liquids, don't do something that's mega low. Like it's the complete opposite of what we'd, I suppose, be used to.
100%.
I suppose like when it comes from a medical need, if it's like a last this resort, then you can kind of understand it somewhat. But my biggest issue is going to be what's happening to these people. Like how do you come back from that? Like what do you do like when I fancy a Nando's today? Like if I fancy doing something different, you just can't.
I think that just like sounds like it has 100% chance of failure for like longevity. It makes no sense because like, I know you can't really give guidelines in general advice. Like you guys would know this too. You can't give general advice about fitness and stuff because there is no general advice. It's always like, it depends. Every single question you get, oh, well, it depends, you know? So like, it's difficult. That's why a scheme like that, it's difficult to make it general, but still I feel like that isn't going to work very well unless they give people a bit of a plan to work out of it and be like, and even like knowledge and explaining things and stuff of what is happening to their body when they have 800 calories every single day for so long. It does not seem smart, but
I feel like that's the one thing like the general world doesn't do. They do things like the crash diets or that name's horrendous, isn't it? Soup and shake. But so they'll do it for a period of time, but they don't educate them. You don't learn it in, I don't know, you don't learn it in high school or college or just like the basics of nutrition. And do you really? You don't, like, we don't do that in the UK anyway, do we, Jesus?
Okay, I had stuff like, I don't know if you had it over there, but we had like RP, like those lessons where you put condoms on bananas and people just fuck about for a good hour.
Yeah.
Oh, sex ed.
Yeah, but
it's sex education.
The kids are watching RedTube and stuff. They know what's going on.
I was not doing that as a child.
All the kids are watching RedTube. Take podcasts. Take good points.
But I just don't think there's any longevity in it. I can see some of the sense. I know the research is showing that there's been some evidence that it works in like a
with who though? Who have they done research on?
They tested it with like some people who've got type 2 diabetes, and that's why I mean I'm not saying it doesn't work.
How could that not work? Of course it's going to work. They're going to put anybody on edited calories, they're going to get shredded.
You'll
probably lose muscle mass in the process. But like, what's the goal here? Like, it's going to do its job, but is it going to work like sustainably as well? And then a year later, or are they going to slip back into their normal habits because they don't know what else to do?
100%.
Like, yeah. I mean, and that's like what you were saying too, and going into just low calorie diets in general. Like, you can compare that to just being on very low calorie diets just in the fitness industry alone. Like it's the same principle, like why it's bad. You know, you can't sustain that. And then what do you do when you get to those things that like those, you know, things that happen when you get your calories that low, then what do you do? Mm-hmm. Most people, they just binge and put it all back on again.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's one of the questions I was going to ask you as well, Zach, is what is your preference now when it comes to like your own weight loss on your own fat ass, maybe in comparison to
Did you say fat ass then?
Probably.
That was a sly dig.
I was getting the sly digs in there,
fat
really.
Ass, fat loss.
What is your preference maybe like now to Zach, like 5 years ago maybe?
Yeah, well, my thing has always been I've had to get my calories pretty low in the past to get, because I think I've just not, like, I'm not a big guy.
Yeah,
like when I'm lean, like when I was younger, I would get down to like, I don't know if you guys do it, like probably 65 kilos at my, like when I started training, shredded. So my calories were always like 1300, 1500 at the end of my diet. So I was comfortable on low calories because I was used to it. And because of that, I think I would have a propensity to get very, very low with my food. So like I would have this mental thing of like, I can't get lean unless my calories are below 1500. Like that's what I'd tell myself. and I would just go like nuts. So I do it very quickly as well, because I just get straight into it. And then now in the past, probably like year, specifically in the past 4 months of this cut, I've done it very, very slow. And that's been like very consciously keeping food in a lot higher than normal, just to prove to myself that I can get that lean and eat that much. And then I had to go, well, I had to rewire my own head, because like I can happily tell other people to eat, you know, more than what they would think. And then they'll follow it. They'll get the results. Like, this is great. But when it comes to yourself, I think you're just much like more critical. So I've always been like very critical on myself. So this time around, I've been doing it very slow, very like, I guess, a more meticulous approach to it, which has been like really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had this conversation yesterday. I was talking about to you about taking your own advice. And as coaches, because we're so used to looking after other people as well, you then don't take on that advice. Like, I've been in a similar position in the past, because I had to diet quite low to get down myself. But saying that, I've done, when I was like 18, I think I did like a show prep where I did a men's physique show, and I was doing it with a coach who I'd been on, like, the lowest I ever went was 2,600, and like my normal days were about 3,200, mate, and I lost about 2 stone.
That's crazy.
And mate, ever tried to do that now? Fucking absolutely no chance, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
I'd be dying all year and never come down. But it was crazy. I don't know, maybe because my metabolism was a different place then. I was a little bit more active as well. But now, like, I've had in the past, and I'm like, my normal kind of comfortable body weight is like 205 in pounds. Okay. It's not kilos, by the way. Jesus, my truck.
He's 10 foot tall, by the way.
But I've had to come down to like 1.8 in the past before. For my weight and height, that's like quite low for me. And I just noticed that I started to get like some negative effects from it as well, especially like from a psychological point of view. I've done that for a long period of time. It's then caused me like even like social anxiety from going out and not wanting to eat in places. It's given like bad relationships with food. It's made me think like on the days where I've even gone like 10% over my calories, like I'm going to put on weight. It just created like a negative effect from being on calories so low for so long.
Yeah, that's like one thing I'm really, really getting into now is that mental side of things that happens that people don't, they don't talk about it, because a lot of people in our space now are talking about it, but more that they don't educate people on what to do and what to expect. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I think is a big thing, because as you guys would know, like from that, when you get your calories so low, there's a number of things that happen like to the body at the time and to the mind, you don't really realize it. You might be like, you think you're doing well because you're sticking to your diet and you're tracking every single thing, but you don't realize what that's doing to your head when you have to track every single thing. Mm-hmm. You think it's like creating this like almost like unconscious thing where you think, I'm going to get fat if I eat 10 calories over. You forget that you're in a 500 calorie deficit. You think, if I am not in that, I'm going to get fat. It's this crazy, like very obsessive thing. So like for example, one thing I'm doing now to not get in that place is if I notice that thought pattern come back, I just break it. If that makes sense. Like, if I'm going about my day and think, oh, I shouldn't have that because that means I'll get fat, I immediately just like recognize that it's some like a weird like negative thought pattern, and I just like try crush it before it gets weird.
I think that's like a well powerful thing to do though as well. And I feel not a lot of people have that in terms of when you start dieting. Because one of our common questions is, when people are in a deficit, am I supposed to be like this hungry? And it's like, they don't expect that they're actually going to be hungry. I'm like, well, yes, because you're in a calorie deficit. They're like, oh, but like, I want to eat a little bit more. Like, I'm very fatigued. And it's kind of finding that balance. It's like, okay, do you actually want to lose fat then? Or do you want more energy to not lose fat? Like, it's hard for people to understand.
It's the time frame too, because like, if they want to lose a massive amount, obviously they're going to need to be hungry, you know, in a short time, they're going to need to be. But if they want to like have more energy, but then do it over a longer period of time, then of course, like, you don't need to be that obsessive and crazy with it all. You can be in a 100 calorie deficit for a longer period of time and not even notice it.
Yeah.
Like, this is okay.
I mean, that's the thing that some people are, is that they are hungry again the first 2 weeks and like, oh, fuck that, I can't do it. And then don't realize that whenever you change anything in your life, is going to have some like impact and knock-on effect to it, especially until like you have settled into that regime and maybe your hormones have changed a little bit, leptin and ghrelin are playing up a little bit, your hunger hormones, until you've really settled into that. So it's not going to be that bad the whole way along. I mean, yeah, the first 2 weeks are generally going to be the worst, especially when you're cutting calories by quite a lot. So I think you just need to settle into a bit of rhythm with it. And at the same time, you're going to, I think, all the way through the diet, have periods where you're hungry. But again, being hungry for 20 minutes never killed anyone. And most of the time, if you can pass that like 20 minute, I'm sure you've done it before, where if you keep busy for like 20 minutes, like whether you get stuck in some work or you're doing something else, generally that hunger will pass after like 20, 30 minutes and you're fine. And
stuff. Sure, right, guys. And I think that's like not having a few tools like in your arsenal, I guess, to like, I guess, just accommodate that. So when you get really hungry, like I usually think, why? And then I'll have reasons to change my carb sources to be more, have higher volume, less calories. So like I would never go into a diet eating super carb dense foods, like say just like rice. I would just wouldn't do it, because for me, I would much rather have like pumpkin, or we've got low carb potatoes here. I don't know if you guys have them there.
Oh, mate, we smashed the arse off pumpkin when we came to the fair because we don't get as much. Yeah, I loved it.
I don't think we get pumpkin here. You can't just buy it in like cubes like you could in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, we loved it out there.
Like, you don't have low carb white potatoes, do you?
Low carb who?
Like potatoes, like regular potatoes.
No, that's not a
what
thing.
Is this, what is that? What is this wizardry?
Okay, yeah, I don't even want to tell you guys because you feel like bad FOMO. It's actually, they're like potatoes with probably 8% carbs.
No,
they're regular potatoes. You don't know the difference yet. So there's like in Australia, and I think in the States, they've got them in some places too. They're called charisma potatoes here. So I get all my guys. Just buy the bag
off Amazon.
The only chance we've got is if we just put like, I don't know, like Clem Brute roll inside a baked potato.
just go. Same effect.
Yeah, same thing, mate. Same shit.
But like, I don't know, stuff like that, I'll put that in my, instead of rice, I'll have like that or pumpkin or something in my oats. I'd, you know, put grated zucchini and like all those things to actually add volume, fill you up a bit more. Mm. What drives me nuts is when I see people, and I'm like, this was in my caption the other day, like when people like weigh their lettuce and just crack it and all that stuff, I'm like, you know, like, oh, but my diet says I have to have 100 grams of greens. I'm like, do you want to eat more? They go, yes. I'm like, we'll do that. You know, like,
yeah, it's literally one calorie.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like in the grand scheme of things, when they're going off like 50 calories as if that's going to do anything. Mm. It's like, just make yourself happy. Make sure you're not actually physically hungry. And then there's always going to be some kind of like need to satisfy a craving. Like you're going to want foods. You're going to miss foods, but that doesn't mean you're hungry. You know, so I think at least cover what you can in terms of like, make sure you're eating enough food in terms of the volume, and then find ways to deal with those cravings when you feel like you want a snack or you want something sweet or whatever that may be. Like there's ways I think to make dieting easier and to deal with those like hunger pangs. You don't have, it doesn't have to be hell. I think people just think it's got to be hell and I can't do it, or it's got to be the best.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It's like you said, it's a balance with it.
Yeah. I think what a lot of people do is like touching that point is, you'll get some people a message like, oh, do you have to weigh out your salad? But then we'll be like, I'll just smash the arse of a chicken kebab both Saturday and Sunday night. So they're really like strict in some areas of where they think they need to be. But then in other areas, like they're just completely an arse. And it's like, there's no balance there between the two.
Because I think it's like, it's that all or nothing approach that people like to have. It's that they think if I have one cookie, it means I may as well have the whole fucking pack. You know, it's like, it doesn't really, it mentally everyone's like that. But you know that you'd be better off having one cookie, leaving it at that, and then not finishing the rest of it. But people go, nah, I'm going all out on this. Like, and then they'd rather diet like for 6 days, perfectly strict, weigh the lettuce, and then on Sunday, don't even worry about it and have all the ice cream they can fit without vomiting. Like, it's very, and I think like the problem is like people don't really talk about that. You know, people don't, they glorify the whole refeed, cheat day, all these things, and then how strict they are. They glorify those aspects and don't really like provide people a framework to make balance.
100%.
That's what it is though. And that actually is one of the questions we wanted to discuss. And it's more so, I guess, like the role of social media. And this obviously does include YouTube and Instagram, because I feel like YouTube's very heavy on the 20,000 calorie cheat meal kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. But what kind of influence do you think it's had on people, but coming from like an influencer perspective? So like when influencers or like celebrities who've been on like Love Island or whatever, and they're promoting these crazy low calorie diets or like juices or whatever they promote, I don't even know, but I guess, like, yeah, what is your perception with, like, social media?
I think it's just so tricky because, like, as you guys would know, people will just believe everything, you know, like they'll believe that this guy got in shape because of this specific diet or this one thing, or he does cheat meals, so that means it's okay. Like, it, people are so easily influenced. So I think we have to be careful, like, as our roles as, like, you know, influencers or whatever you want to call it. But I think we've got to be careful in giving people, like, the right information so that they can make their own decisions. And also, like, I mean, if I've done all of those cheat meal videos on YouTube, and I'll try to tell people how it's not good, you know, don't do this and stuff like that. And I've, like, literally said in multiple videos, this just does well. Like, this kind of content does well.
Yeah.
But that said, I just stopped doing them for a bit because I was like, to be honest with you, the reason why I was doing them and why it was easy was because I was dieting severely. So that made it very easy to go and binge for a day and film it. You know what I mean? And that is, like, that alone is just bad to do and to get that message across there. So I made a video, like a couple of videos telling people how, like, why I was stopping and why it's not good. And then I've always said that, like, I don't like to glorify binge eating because it's not good. And people think that, I guess it's entertaining to watch, but it's, I think I've always tried to tell people that, like, here's the information, do what you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's difficult when it's an entertainment aspect too, especially like with YouTube and all, like, the, you know, like the clickbait stuff, like it's difficult.
Yeah. For me, I don't think that's, like, the biggest issue, because I think as long as you've got your head screwed on, I think people know that you're not doing it every single week where it's becoming like a pattern. I think one of the bigger issues for me is, like, when you've got like celebrities or some influencers coming out and, like, here's my body transformation. There was one the other day. This was me after 6 weeks of being on, like, 1,000 calories a day, doing this, and this. And he's, like, a 200-odd-pound male. And then especially guys are probably waking up the next day and going, that is, like, the pinnacle of what I need to be hitting for weight loss. And they're taking, like, that one person's calorie intake and applying it and thinking, like, that's the holy grail to weight loss. And then most of the time, they're just digging themselves into a hole of probably creating worse relationships with food, and just having that negative side effects from being, like, that low of a caloric deficit.
See, that's funny, because when I started making my cutting videos on YouTube, I actually would lie to people about my intake because it was so low that I didn't want to give that information out. So I had to boost it up. So I was eating maybe 1,400, and then I boosted it up to 1,800 for the video because I knew that people would copy me, even though I say, don't copy me, you know, add in more of this, whatever. But I knew that they would. So I still, like, knowingly just increased it a little bit because I'm like, it's going to be better for them if they do copy. And I still had heaps of comments going, 1,800, that's so low. You're going to die. Like, you can't. I'm like, oh, shit, I really knew what I was doing. So, like, I was, like, the opposite in actually giving people, knowing that they're going to use that and just copy it. I feel like they're just going to do it. You know, people are, they're going to do what they're going to do. So I had to just kind of, like, crank it up a little bit. But I would never tell people to diet on such low calories because, like, people just want something that's going to work, right?
Yeah.
Like, they just want to get the result, but they don't really know what will happen to them once they do get it, or how they're going to feel, what happens to their, you know, their brain, you know?
I think everyone's so different as well. And that's one of the questions I was going to ask you, because I remember when we were in Manchester and we went for something to eat, and I remember talking to Matt about when he's done, like, some of his videos before with regards, like, the big food consumptions. And he seems to be, like, one of those guys who just soaks up food like a sponge. Like, he can just eat. But I know I've done it before, because when I've, like, had massive calorie intakes, like, sometimes the next day I'll eat, like, I've ate close to fuck all. So when you've done some of those videos in the past where you've done the eating challenges, what is, like, or what was your mentality the next day, like, following that? And what was your kind of thought process with your calorie intake?
Well, like I said, at those times, because I was always on such low calories. So my most popular ones, the ones that got, like, 2-4 million views or whatever, like the Happy Meals and stuff, I did them because I was happy to do them, because I was, like, eating 1,300-1,400 calories during the week. Yeah. One day of filming, I'd go, like, the idea of that was awesome to me. Like, I was like, 50 Krispy Kremes, the content. You know what I mean? So, like, as an excuse, like, the camera could have been off the whole time and I would have been doing it anyway.
Yeah.
But it was just an excuse. So what I would do is, like, I would diet like crazy for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, it'd be like, okay, that's the challenge. I wouldn't eat anything, like, in the morning. So I was actually proper hungry. Mm. So imagine how hungry you'd be after eating nothing.
And then
on the seventh day, literally nothing. you'd like smash food. So I did that and did the video. And then that night would be always just like nothing, because I'd always feel so full still. And then the next day would be straight back into like, I reckon the next day would be fasting until maybe like lunchtime. And it would always be double up on cardio. Like it was just that crazy opposite, like all out mindset of just extreme burning calories. And then it would just kind of, the cycle would continue until the next video.
Yeah.
I mean, I lost a lot of muscle and I was slowly gaining fat at one point. It was very weird what was happening with my composition.
I mean, it gets to that point, doesn't it? And we were speaking about it yesterday, because I think you put a composition update up yesterday. And Lucy was like, fucking hell, Zach looks massive. And I was like, all right, just calm the fuck down first.
Blocked me.
Yeah, mate, you'll be unfollowing you after this podcast, trust me. I think that shows in like your physique at the moment that you look a lot fuller than you do, but you're still chipping away at the body fat. I guess that's just due to the way that you've approached diet now, as opposed to how you did back then as well.
100%. It's so much less restrictive now in terms of like my carbs and like probably double on average what they were at the last time I was at this body fat. Cause I always just have this thing of like, just cut it out. And I'd really just deplete. And then I would only look good with a huge pump. Like that was basically it. And then I would slowly just feel very skinny. So I think like there was a lot of time where I could have held on to more muscle than I did. And I probably burnt a lot of muscle unnecessarily, but especially doing those big cheat meal, like the cheat days and stuff. I think that is just a sure way to kill your muscle, because it makes you really over diet, but then you're just flooding your body with a mass amount of calories at one time. Yeah. So that's probably like the worst possible way of doing things. But still, people promote it. They'll be like, "Oh, it's a cheat day. Go nuts!" Like,
yeah, I think the more people speak about it, the better it is. Because I know you put a video up yesterday, didn't you, about your experience?
Yeah, I think it always comes from experience as well. So I finally, after like 4 years, yesterday uploaded my, because you won't even know this, but I had an eating disorder for 2.5-3 years, which really? Is quite a long period of time. Yeah, I was bulimic for 3 years. Like whilst I was doing my fitness content as well. And it's like, honestly, the amount of messages that I had yesterday, like were unbelievable. Like, oh my God, you've made me feel like I can talk about it. I can't believe somebody who is like an influencer could have an eating disorder. I thought you were just always naturally like in really good shape and all this. But it was the amount of people who were like completely shocked, weren't they? Mm. I think it's because I've never spoke about it for one. So it's quite hard to kind of like, think, oh God, she had a really bad relationship with food. But it always comes from like a learning curve. And I think if you're, because you do it now, you did it in your food videos where you explain to people, like, don't do this. Obviously your shredding kind of calories and things now is so much better. What, like 2 years on? Obviously my relationship with food 2 years on is so much better. And I think that's where influencers can be really, really powerful in like a really good way, not in terms of like the Love Island ones who come out and eat 1,000 calories. But that was a big video for me yesterday, wasn't
fitness,
it?
Was fitness like one of the, I'm sure you touched on the video. Was that like one of the reasons that you think it triggered it? Like that it actually did it?
Yeah, for sure. So I used to swim for GB. I was a complete full-time swimmer for when I was like 14 to 18 competitively. So for 4 years, my body fat was measured every 3 weeks. I was weighed every day. We would watch what we like eating and stuff like that. So I think for me, that was the trigger. So when I kind of went from training 9 times a week, full-time swimmer, everything was so like specific to then stopping. Mm-hmm. I think I was a very, very confused girl because I continued to do that amount of training, but like not in the same sense, because I wasn't in the pool 9 times a week. I was like doing fasted cardio. I was weight training in the evening. I started to put a bit of weight on naturally. I would when I stopped swimming, didn't like it, was still eating the same. Because when I was a swimmer, I could literally eat like, I don't know, because you're doing so much exercise. It was like 5 hours in the pool a day. I could have like 2,500 calories from a young age. So when I quit, I was kind of still eating that. So I thought my only way out was like binge eating, And then I just ended up being bulimic for like two years because for me, I was like, I feel so trapped. But I think it came from the competitive swimmer background because so many athletes messaged me yesterday being like, I'm a dancer, I'm a swimmer, I did this, and it is exactly the same. I had an eating disorder as well because of this, and it's never spoke about, but I think it's such a common thing for young, I think it'll be guys as well, but a lot of young girls, they're so pressured to look a certain way or be, like, I had to be a certain weight for like 4 years. It was like so specific. So I think a lot of people who messaged me yesterday did also come from that competitive background. But I feel like it's like a taboo topic because in my video, I mentioned like British women and stuff and how they, like they weren't the best with it. But I feel like people are just quite scared to talk about that bit, I think.
They are for sure. And it is just like the pressure thing too, like you're saying. You had the external pressures from that. And then people nowadays, they have the pressure on themselves to look a certain way. So their calories get that low. That like, and this is like what I've found too, is I speak to a lot of people that like just start dieting, say for a competition. And they just start, and then they start, and I'm like, so how are you finding it all? And they're like, towards the tail end of it. And then they start talking about food, and I can recognize exactly like, that is not a normal way to think about food. You know, it's like, I was, when I was super lean, I would spend time on Instagram scrolling through food pages and just saving them, right? And I'm like, this is normal. Like,
you did that?
It was like, and it was nonstop. Like it was just nonstop. And I didn't really know at the time that it was like a bad thing because I'm like, it's good. I can't wait to have them and smash all this. But that, like that thought pattern that I was just creating every day, it wasn't normal. It wasn't good. And I think that people, it's just a, like, it's a formula to get to that point.
Yeah.
Tell somebody restrict your calories, over restrict them for a long period of time. I guarantee you, you'll get to that point if you're not aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's why I try to tell people, like, if you want to look a certain way at that, like super shredded level, some things are going to happen in like, mentally, you're going to feel obsessed with food. It's all you're going to think about. You're going to get body dysmorphia where you feel like you're fatter than what you are. You're going to tie your self-worth to how you look. As soon as you lose your abs, you're going to feel like shit. There's all these things that like are going to happen if you're not aware of it. So I think like one of the biggest things you can do is be aware of that. And that's what I'm trying to do now as I get leaner, is be aware of those things that can happen and try not to let them take over as normal habits. You know, like try to keep perspective all the time of like, you know, whether you tell yourself that it's okay, you look good, even though you're not like 2% body fat, or you tell yourself if you don't need, you're not craving certain foods, it's just your mind doing that. I think that's pretty, like that can be powerful for me.
Yeah, 100%. And we've spoken about that like recently on one of the podcasts, is about self-talk, and the way that you talk to yourself is one of the biggest things, especially when it comes to body image. But I can completely relate on the food side of things. Remember I was saying to you, listen, mate,
I thought that was dead strange, didn't I?
Yeah, but I was like 20 when I did my first competition. And where most guys were probably saving like images from Bang Bros, I was saving like 100 images of like, my fetish was white chocolate, mate. So I was just saving everything white chocolate. Like I had 100 images on my laptop. I remember showing Lucy and she's like, what the fuck is this? It's like my porn collection of white chocolate.
That's actually what it's like. That's like, I've compared that in a video as well before. I said, like, most guys my age would be just saving photos of girls and all this stuff. And I'm like, you should see these snacks I've got going on. It's just not something that you want to have, like, on your mind 24/7.
Yeah, especially when you're single, it probably looks a little bit a little bit strange.
100%. And when I was, like, when my calories were that low, forget about it. Like, I just lost interest in, because, like, sex drive just went out the window when I was that low. So, at least I got my food. Like that was. Like, but the funny thing is, like nobody tells you about these things.
Yeah.
They just show you how good they look at 6% body fat, and then when you get there, it's on you to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is one of the biggest problems, like nowadays, especially. So it's like good, like Lucy, that you put that video out, sharing your story with people because they would think that they're the only ones that have those tendencies and.
Yeah, that was it massively, wasn't it yesterday?
It's one of the big things that comes as a side effect of a knock on though, isn't it? And again, because people don't talk about it. I remember when I was doing that show prep, like no joke, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. My mates were like in the bar in the club and I was in the back of his car licking the rest of my cod out my Tupperware. No joke. It was fucking, it was minging, mate. But then that's had a knock on effect to me later on because I've spoken before on this podcast, I don't think I spoke to you about before, Zach, is I ended up with something and it was obviously had some kind of impact from that. I had something called NES, which is nighttime eating syndrome. So I got to a point where I was waking up in the middle of the night, like, not completely conscious. So it was almost like sleepwalking. And I was getting up. You remember, it was crazy. Like, I couldn't stop doing it. It was happening like 2 or 3 times a week.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like smashing food in, wasn't I? To a point though, mate, it was crazy. But to a point where, because I wasn't properly eating it, it was making like my throat bleed and stuff because I was just smashing it back. It must have been like my body.
I'd say you'd have like up to 1,000 calories.
In a sitting, yeah. In a sitting. But it was like weird shit. Like, I'd get a Twix and like dip it in hummus and eat it. Like, not normal behavior, mate. It was weird.
Really?
Yeah. But then the next day, I was completely depressed because obviously, as you can imagine, if you're dieting, and then
yeah, you feel sabotaged, like,
yeah, yeah, it's like going to work every day and not getting paid, like, you just, you're putting all this work in, but then getting fuck all back from it. But it got to a point where it happened for about 12 months, didn't it?
It was a well long period of time, and it was so hard because you were dieting, but then at least, like, I'd say like 3 times a week at least, you'd have like an extra 1,000 calories a night. But it was honestly in like a 10 minute thing, because I sleep like a log. So I don't really hear him. And in my house, we don't have locks on the kitchen door. So I couldn't, I just heard him upstairs and have like, I run up like at like 2 a.m. I'm like, come back down.
Yeah, but then I was quite aggressive, wasn't I? Yeah. It's like when you wake a sleepwalker up. You know,
You're not supposed to wake people up at all, are you?
Yeah.
So you have no recollection of it?
I'd have a recollection of like, I could probably taste something in my mouth in the morning, or again, like my throat would be bleeding, or I'd be really, really bloated from like eating food so quickly.
And the kitchen in the morning is just like a mess.
Yeah, mate, it was weird.
I'll be honest, I've never heard about that. Like, that's...
Yeah. Google NES, it's quite rare, but I think that was kind of a knock-on effect of all those years of neglecting...
Nutrition.
The way I was, nutrition and being in like really low-calorie diets. But then I went to doctors about it. Like, I saw a therapist about it because she like helped me with like the sleep side of things, because it's also a sleeping disorder as well. But mate, I was Googling stuff on Amazon, like house alarms that I could put on the stairs that would wake me up if I went past them, like fucking chains for the cupboards and stuff. I was gonna say,
we could have locked the cupboards up.
Yeah, we just didn't have
it. Oh, we would have broken them.
You would have got through them. When we stayed at your parents' house, there's a key that you can lock the kitchen, but he'd find the key and open it. Like, it's not. It's complete, like, and we swapped sides in the bed, so you'd wake me up and nothing. It was hard.
That is so bad. Like, it was crazy. So frustrating waking up going, oh, you fucked your diet again.
Yeah. Sleep. That's literally what it was.
Yeah, it got to the point where I was like, it was so depressing. The only time that it stopped was when we went to Australia, wasn't it? Mm. Because obviously, what I think was because my time zone was like flipped. To like my circadian rhythm or something like that, and the way that my food intake was. But yeah, mate, it was the weirdest thing ever. But I think that had come from as well, like, me, I always had a bad relationship with food when I was younger through like binge eating and stuff. And I think that was off the back of that whole thing of be restrictive and then on a Saturday just fucking smash as much food in as you can.
Exactly.
As much as possible. So that had slowly built up that bad
relationship
of diet binge, diet
bad
binge.
Habits. Yeah, exactly, because it's bad habits. But the 6 days that you're dieting like crazy is good habits in your mind, because it's like it's accomplishing the goal, and that means you're being good if you're sticking to your diet and eating nothing. And then on the one day that you're allowed a cheat day, whatever it is, then you also call it good habits because you're allowed it. But really, when you look at what's going on, like, it's just practicing the worst. You know, there's no moderation, there's no balance being practiced. There's no actual like good habits. Like, one thing I'm doing now is just to kind of not get to that point is, as soon as I feel like I'm getting too funny with like food and the mentality of it, I'll force myself to eat a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like every day I'll have something like a little bit of like Kit Kat or whatever if I'm feeling something, because it stops me from spiraling down that path of like thinking I have to be low. I can't have this, can't have that. And it's been really good because it basically just levels me out a little bit.
I think that's one of the good things, but I often find there's like two different types of clients that I work with sometimes, and it's often sometimes I have to look at in terms of their behavior. But you sometimes get people like, no, I need to be mega strict all the time. I can't have a little bit, because if I have a little bit, I'll have a load. But then you get some people who need that balance between having a bit of something that they like with something that they need. And I've spoken about this before, and I've mentioned this on the podcast, is it's like when I've said to you about when your mum said to you, don't go and play with that kid down the road because he's weird and shoves crayons up his bum, but you still go and play with that kid anyway because you've been told not to, so you'll go and do it. So I think if you create that kind of relationship with food where it's like, no, I've got to completely cut it off because it's bad for me, you're just going to have it in abundance anyway. So sometimes having a little bit of kick out or whatever it may be, sometimes just stops that from happening and creating those barriers.
And it's hard too, like 100%. Because the people also that would say, like you said, I can't have any of it, like, because otherwise I'll just want more. It's fine. And you go, okay. And then but if you watch what happens with them over the long term, what happens when the diet's done? You know what I mean? Like, then that's what gets me, is like, it's very confusing because they might think, oh no, I'm fine for this 12 weeks. Like, I don't want to touch anything. I'll be strict. But then what happens like after the 12 weeks, what happens on their refeed day? What are those practices and habits? Are they going to go all out and binge whatever they missed? And that's like the hard thing I think people don't really get, is because they live so short term of like day by day, the whatever 12 week plan it is, but they don't think about what happens after that. And what, are they never going to have those foods ever again? It's like, it's a very difficult thing. Like, but you can't really, like, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't tell people to practice moderation.
100%.
Sometimes they just go, I just want the result. Like, you know, and otherwise they might not get the result. So you're like, okay, we'll clean it up and be super strict. And if you need a day of the week where you can have a few things that you might miss, then go for it. But it's very difficult.
Yeah. I think one of the other things is it's obviously difficult for us as males, because I think one of the things that I did was got pissed off because we have testosterone, we get moody sometimes, and that's one of the things that's a knock-on effect of low-calorie diets. But then for females, you've got other things that come into play, like ovulation, the menstrual cycle, other hormones that obviously get suppressed by that, which is even more dangerous for females in the future when it comes to low-calorie diets.
Yeah, I think it is as well, though. Naturally, like, our physiology as women, we store more fat for pregnancy, like, in the future. So, and for some reason, people, well, women in general, they can't come to terms with the fact that we store more fat than guys. And like, you wouldn't want the same body fat as a male. Yeah. You'd look like you're about to step on stage. Like, it would just be bizarre. But, and so many of my clients are like, oh, I've got like stubborn fat around my stomach and my thighs. I'm like, yeah, I have it all over my thighs, but I would literally have to eat like 1,000 calories to lose that, because it's just not physiology for me. It's just not a thing. It's just not possible. But trying to get that message across to people, because you see a lot of like coaches on Instagram now who only set their clients' calories for their own ego, so they can get the quickest transformation photos, so they can make more money. And then you've got my clients who are doing like a 12 or 14 week cut, like, oh, but they did it in 6 weeks. I'm like, well, let's have a look where they are after that 6 weeks. And it's that comparison of social media. I definitely think women do it a lot more than guys. I feel like they're quite heavy for it.
When you get anything in life really quick, like when people win the lottery, they end up fucking all up because you get things too quick and they don't work for it. So it's the same kind of effect.
Yeah, it's well true.
100%. And that's why it's hard with social media too, because like, people are always going to be like better at losing fat, or they're always going to be willing to get the calories lower and lose more in a smaller window, you know. And then it's hard for just, I guess the key is just not to compare, you know. Like, I've learned not to compare myself with anybody else, because like, even genetics is so different. There's no point even like comparing with somebody else. Completely different genetics, everything's completely different. Like, but because beginners don't really get that, so they'll just think, oh, I just want that result, like, why can't I just look like that?
It's such a big thing. Like, I was training with Elliot the other day, and I was like, fuck off. Like,
every time.
I was like, we're just doing stuff, and like, he hasn't trained for like a week, and I was like, he's fucking just strength through the roof. He's absolutely, like, a pumper. He gets on, he looks massive. I was like, fuck off.
Dude, he actually didn't train for all the months. I had a home gym fully decked out. I'm going as hard as I can, and he still looks better than me. He doesn't work that much.
Yeah, mate. He's a freak. But then that comes down to genetics, and I think one of the biggest, I've said it a few times, is one of the biggest killers of joys and happiness is comparison. But a lot of people will come to you as like they come to us, and they'll be like, when they want to start a program, they'll start the program because like, I want to look like Zach. Like, and getting that message across that it doesn't take 12 weeks to get to this point. It's going to take a lot longer, and the journey's a lot longer than that. So I think comparison's a massive one. One of the other things I want to quickly touch on, I don't know if you've ever tried it before, and we spoke about before in the past, is diet breaks and the use of diet breaks. So obviously there's been kind of like some research papers published in regards to comparing like a normal, like maybe like prolonged dieting period of not mega aggressive, so maybe like a 10% deficit. And then we've got like this new research which has shown good results from doing like an aggressive 2-week window followed by like maybe a 1 or 2 week diet break period where you bring your calories back up to maintenance. And the fat loss over that period of time has been shown to be kind of similar, but the metabolism of those who've done the diet break has shown to be a little bit better because obviously they brought the calories back up. Have you ever tried anything like that before?
No, I haven't. I know it is definitely like the ideal, and I've always said like I would do a diet break if I say got my calories too low and then I wanted to kind of like get a bit lower but without eating less. But like you're saying before, I'm too critical, so I never kind of let myself do it. Just stupid. I've given it to a heap of people to do it and seen like awesome results, because like you said, having that, especially even better by having like the mini ones, like 2 weeks at a time or something, that's been like shown to reverse the metabolic adaptations heaps, like that you get from like a normal just diet, like deficit. But I've never actually committed to like say 2 weeks on, 2 weeks maintenance or whatever, because like I'm a creature of habit. I'll do the same thing. Have you guys done it before?
I've never personally done it.
No, I'm the same though. I feel like I eat the same thing every day.
I think we're like in a different mindset though, the way that we like kind of our consistency is at with the level because we've been dieting for a long time.
Yep, that's what I mean. Like when I do like my what I eat in a day videos, I eat the same thing every day because I genuinely don't care and I enjoy what I eat. And I was like, oh my, is that not boring? I'm like, no, because I know it sits well with me. It makes me feel full. I have a lot of toast in my diet, which I really enjoy. So it's like the satiety's in there. And people are like, oh my God, but like I need a different dinner every single day. I'm like, well, you do that then. But I don't have the time to cook something different every single day.
I think the other thing with that as well, and like when we had clients in the past, they're like, oh, do we get a new diet this week?
It's
like
new diet plan each week.
Absolutely fucking not. Because when it comes to like measuring stuff, if you're changing things around all the time, how do you know what's like pull in, pull out, when to cut stuff back a little bit?
Yeah,
you don't know what's like variables. Work. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They add in 50 variables, change one, you see what happens.
Exactly. So it makes it.
I think
it
like the
really
good
difficult.
thing about the diet breaks, I think the like one of the best things is the mental side of things, because it actually gives you that mental break, and then eat a bit more, see that not much is going to happen to your body fat. You know, like I think like I would always have them to put in when I get quite lean, to the point where I start feeling like I feel like I'm dieting now. Like, and I'm not quite there yet. I'm pretty comfortable during the day. But at the point where I start getting too food focused, I'll be inclined to put one in there. Like for just a week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, just at maintenance. So I can prove to myself that maintenance of like, what is it? 2300 or something for me is not going to make me fat. Because when you're dieting, you think that maintenance is going to make you fat.
Yeah.
But definition it can't, but you just are convinced it will. So like I'll keep them in there for when I get to that point. But I think that I like to get in a roll in terms of like my fat loss and progress. And I like to kind of just keep chipping away at it and seeing the changes like week by week. So different methods, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest things, the mentality approach to it is, I think if people can come, it depends on the personality of the person, I believe, as well, with the type of method. Like, are they the type of person who needs those breaks in there and it helps them come out and leaves them in a better position when they come out of the diet? Because obviously a big thing of when you go for a transformation, you want to have good relationships with food. You don't want to create these negative effects that come from aggressive dieting. So I think for some people, they're really good. And I've used it with loads of clients before who have got really good results from it, and they've bettered their relationship with food in the long run from doing it, as opposed to just being aggressive all the time.
Exactly. And it's a good way too of even like giving them that way out, like you're saying, just so they know that it's not, they're not going to go and binge like crazy when it's all done. They've done it before. They've got that self-control where they can just chill at maintenance and nothing will happen. Like, I think it's good practice to do.
Yeah, 100%. I think just before we come to a conclusion, I want
conclusion.
I'm getting all professional, aren't I?
That sounded like he was writing, you know, when you do it in high school. And in conclusion, today's essay.
Summarizing the essay.
I'm off. with binge eating, mate, and it's a big topic and something that we get asked about a lot. And one, I think once you're into that, like that headspace of binge eating and you're in a bit of a role that it's so hard to break, what will kind of like be some of your quick fire things that maybe you've used in the past or tips that you've gave to other people that have helped kind of reverse that process and get out of it?
I think it's a good question. It's more of like building the right, like I was saying before, the right habits mentally, the right thought patterns, like over time. So a few things that I tell people and that I do myself is, like I was saying a few before, like knowing also that the food isn't going anywhere. So that's a big one. Like I think that when you're dieting, you've got this like weird urgency and like scarcity that it's like it's gonna go if you don't do it now. If it's your refeed day and you don't eat all the bread, it's like there's gonna be no bread in the world the next day. It's just this weird thing where you feel like you're gonna run out if you don't do it right now. So I think that's helped me, is knowing that like the food's not going anywhere. You know, you don't need to go and smash it all right now. If you've got a bigger goal in mind, great, the food can wait and it's always gonna be there. I think having just a sense of awareness with yourself of knowing what is happening under the surface of when your calories get low, when you start to get these obsessions with food, knowing why, and that's perfectly normal. It's just, you know, it's just, I guess, a side effect of a very low calorie diet. And I think having like ways to accommodate that, like keeping yourself full, not being hungry all the time. I mean, you can go through, like you said, through little bits of hunger, but I mean, you don't need to be starving every single hour and not being satisfied. You should finish a meal and be pretty full, you know. Mm. So that might mean getting a little bit smarter with your diets and not eating super like carb and fat dense meals. It might mean switching out your rice for pumpkin, or switching out, adding in zucchini to your oats or something like that, just to add volume in there. Mm. So it's being smart with your food choices, and I guess just not encouraging the bad habits of being very obsessed and extreme and like telling yourself, no, I've got to weigh this, I've got to do this, I kind of one slip up. I think if you keep those very extreme, intense thoughts, they just compound. And I feel like they get worse. Because if you tell people, oh, no, you see those guys that are so extreme, like they have to track everything on MyFitnessPal, even though they could probably do it by eye, but they have to put it in there. I reckon those kind of people are the ones that are a bit more susceptible to it, mm-hmm. because they are just so like, you know, meticulous and they're putting a lot of importance on the little things, like the grams of carbs and fats, when really they should be having a bit of a holistic approach to it, being like, if I have this and go over my calories by 50, it's not the end of the world. It's nothing will happen. I think like having those things in the back of your head all the time will make a world of difference.
Yeah, 100%. So those barriers and guidelines. What was your input from your video yesterday?
In terms of what?
In overcoming that eating disorder.
Oh, it was quite a long-winded video, but mine was more so in terms of like educating yourself. I did it in a very different way. I ended up becoming a coach, but I think people need to educate themselves, one, on kind of like the negative effects of having bulimia. Like, I mean, it can kill you. It's so bad, like the actual negative effects. So I taught myself like, okay, this is what could happen to you. This is what is happening. Okay, so educate yourself, like the science behind it. I don't think a lot of people would do that, but for me, it worked so well to understand like what I was eating, what was the impact of training twice a day, what was the impact of, for example, making yourself sick, what is it doing to you? So I educated myself.
I think that's one of the biggest things, and what the government in the UK is missing with this whole scheme, is that education is the biggest thing and the most important
thing. I will voice for president.
I'm fucking leaving.
We don't even have presidents here, do we? No. We have prime ministers. I will voice for prime minister.
But I think one of the biggest things that I know is with binge eating, and one of the reasons why it can occur is that even when I set myself my own calories, or when I set calories for clients before, the mindset thing for a lot of people is, right, okay, I've been set 2,000, so if I cut them down a little bit further to like 1,008, I'll get there quicker. And then what happens then is like, all right, I'm fucking absolutely starving now because I've cut my calories lower than what my coach has told them they need to be. So then they overeat. So that is, for me, what causes binge eating a lot of the time. And I'm sure I've done it before in the past, and you may have done it before in the past as well, Zach. But I think for people who are stuck in that zone of binge eating, and it's really difficult to do, I've just done it with a client recently, is I've told her to delete MyFitnessPal because she was weighing everything.
Yeah,
so it's almost, exactly. it's almost like detaching yourself from the Matrix.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just,
yeah, we watched it.
Yeah, just coming out. Like, Neo, fuck off a minute. Like, you need to just take a break.
Yeah.
And I think if you can then, it really, really hard again when you're stuck in that mind frame, but stop tracking. So going back to just having 3 meals per day of substantial size with a decent calorie intake and having 1 or 2 snacks in there, enjoy your training. Like, stop putting as much emphasis on it. I think if you can take those barriers and boundaries away of the numbers being there, then you've got nowhere. You've got nowhere to fall over. You can't spill over because there isn't a boundary there in the first place, which is what for a lot of people creates the binge, I believe.
That's, I reckon that's huge. Like, both of those points on educating people on what the hell's going on, and then also not being so extreme with all of the numbers. Like, I reckon that's pretty much the crux of it. Because, like, even for me, I stopped using my Fitness Pal daily ages ago. But there was a point where I was using it like every single day.
Same.
And then when that happens, like, what's that telling your brain that you need to do that? Otherwise, you'll get fat. That's kind of what exactly is you're telling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even not doing that, but you'll mentally still track. Like, if you go out to eat, you'll I can pretty much guess protein, carb, and fat very closely. Like, it's pretty cool how you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my superpower. I'm mad. But it's like, it's pretty crazy, because when you've done it that many times, then you can look at a meal and be like, oh yeah, that's about this. And that's what I think it's good for. Like, I think my Fitness Pal is good for that, of learning what the hell's in food. But if you rely on it, it's going to actually do more harm than good in the end, because you'll end up obsessing about the numbers of things, which don't matter. Like,
yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more. And we all become obsessed with those things, whether it's money, calories, whatever it is. We do too much of it. It's going to create a bad relationship. But really appreciate that, mate. I appreciate your input. I think one of the things I just wanted to ask before we wrap up is, what is the next day in the life of? Or can you look it that way?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you the one. I'm posting one because when's this coming out? This will be.
We're gonna try and get this up tonight. So don't give anything away that you don't want to give away.
And that's cool. Cool. The next one's Matt Does Fitness, and I genuinely think it's my best one yet.
Oh mate, I think I've seen you.
It's so good.
I think I've seen you. Were you kneeling down in shoes? Is that sort
of? Yeah, I was being Luca. Yeah. I'll give one bit away. Because me and Matt always pay out at each other. Like, we always just give each other heaps of shit. Yeah. And so I asked him, like, can you record yourself running me through your day, basically, so I can use that as like the content? And and he's like, yeah, sure. And I knew we'd do something. So like, and he just has little digs throughout the video, like, just, you know, hanging shit on me and then making me do like very, very outrageous things that he clearly doesn't do. So I bet he, as like, which I expected. I'm like, this is fine, I expected it. But just as like a bit of a chance at redemption, I just basically said that this sounds so much worse now that I say it, but I did a skit where I was Luca, and then I had to read the lines that Matt was giving me. Otherwise, I'd have to go back in the cage and wouldn't eat dinner for a week. And then someone from Child Protection Services came in, and that was that bit. So I'm genuinely excited for that one. We'll see. Hopefully, people take it well.
Oh, mate. Yeah. The Batman was sick. I probably enjoyed it. I think you hated it in the end, though, because I didn't stop singing that song that you had on there.
Yeah, what?
The Rick Ross one, was
it?
Yeah. Oh, same. Yeah. Jeez.
Oh, my God. I thought it was like a week. Did not stop a week.
Oh, do you know what I'm going to get? Okay. What were you going to say?
So the next one I think I'm going to do is I've bought full-on Spider-Man costumes, like Spider-Man and Venom, because I get Joel and Venom. And this is very expensive, this whole ordeal. And then I've got a Shrek costume just hanging around the house. So
I'm looking forward to that one. I just wanted to give I wanted to give Erica a shout out as well, because I think you reposted one of the stories where Erica was like Catwoman in one of her videos.
Oh yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. She's one of our members on the MCS school platform.
She's awesome.
But she's great, mate. She's I think she's fully looking forward to this episode as well. And I think she'll be made up that we give her a little shout out as well, because she's great, isn't she?
Definitely.
Yeah, keep it up, Erica.
But really, really appreciate your time, mate. Yeah. Thanks for coming on, discussing the topic today. And we'll definitely have to get some of the books in the future, and hopefully, fingers crossed, if the borders allow it, I'm sure we'll see you hopefully some point over the next decade, maybe. But if people want to see more of you, Zach, as well, where can they find you?
Instagram, YouTube, Zach Perner.
Oh, nice and simple.
Yeah.
Love that. But yeah, a massive thank you to Zach again and everyone who is listening. Thank you for sharing and posting as you always do. It means a lot to us and we will see you.
But make sure that you tag, obviously, both the school, me and Lucy, Zach, in if you enjoyed this week's episode of the podcast, please leave a review. It takes like 20 seconds of your time and massively help us out because we're hopefully rooting for...
Well, we're number two, aren't we, in the fitness charts?
Yeah.
In the UK. But number one's nice.
Yeah, well, number one will taste a little bit better. No. If you're not number one, you're a loser, basically. So we need an ego boost.
Yeah.
If you're not first, you're last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But thanks everyone who's listening, and we will catch you in next week's episode.
Bye, guys.